Welcome to the Occupational Safety Leadership Podcast, episode number 21. And in this one, we're going to talk about the OSHA Voluntary Protection Program. Last one, episode 20, we talked about worksite analysis. Today's, we're going to talk about hazard prevention and control. And this is also a part A and a part B. There's no way I can talk about this whole thing. You guys don't want to listen to me drone on and on and on. So today, we're going to go about half of into hazard prevention and control, and then we'll cover the next half in episode 22. So with that, let's just go ahead and dive right in. So hazard prevention and control, this is where they really sit down and break down, list your engineering controls and your PPE out there, and just what are you doing to protect people from, just like it says, hazards out there. How are you preventing it and controlling it out there? So these examples I'm going to talk about does not mean that it's you must 100% follow this, just like in the previous one. These are just examples that worked out really good for me, and I hope that you can pick up some good tips and tricks and use it at your place. So when we talk about engineering control, how do we keep people from coming in contact with hazardous energy? You know, we can use machine guards. One thing that I've been able to use at other places is called a spill cable out there. So basically, it just senses some kind of fluid on the cable, and it'll say leak at 122 feet. And of course, you don't know what the leak is, you know, and all that. But you can look at the map and say, oh, as long as I walk 122 feet, I'm going to find this. So for me, it's worked out fantastic, because even if it's just a water leak, it doesn't have to be sulfuric acid. It doesn't have to be anything awful. You still have to tackle it as quick as you possibly can at the same time too. Interlocks on the sides of the machines, you know, it helps to keep people away from that hazardous energy, that if the machine is running, person takes the side off, the interlock kicks in, machine stops, all that stuff then. So incipient smoke detection. So these are places I've used in clean rooms. And it's basically sampling for incipient smoke in the background when it's pulling your everyday air sample also out there. So it's a fantastic way of going back and finding a fire in the incipient stage. I can think of two times when it went off with my human senses. I couldn't smell any fire. I couldn't sense anything. But when we went back and started to take all the sides off the equipment, we did find where it was just starting to crackle out there. So for me, I have found that these are fantastic and very cheap insurance policies in the grand scheme of things. But with it being new and cutting edge, sometimes people are a little scared to go down this route. Isolation for the equipment. You know, if you're going to put a big cage around it, you're going to have a robotic arm, you're going to have something. When you try to enter that cage and the power is not off, the power has not been in some form of lockout, tag out, the interlock will kick in and turn off the machine. Lasers. I do everything I can to have an enclosed laser. So all of us are flawed humans, and I wish that I could say that we would always have our glasses on and we'd always follow the SOP and we'd have the light on for the room, and you know, we'd do everything we possibly could. But I also know that as being flawed humans, we're thinking about the weekends. We're not always active in the workplace. So I like to use enclosed lasers. It's actually a super, super cheap system. And then you also don't have to have people wear glasses at the same time. So for me, it's been a real win-win out there. Light curtains on the different pieces of equipment out there. So all of us have seen where people have tried to keep a machine running and said, well, you know, I could probably get that jam out of there. I don't got to follow the lockout tag out. I can just, you know, but that light curtain is going to sense something has broken that beam out there. And when that happens, the machine stops. So let's go on to the next slide here. Look at a couple of work practice controls. So one of the least used, I think, is going to be the new hire orientation, you know. And there's a lot of people saying, well, How can that be a control? You're really setting the tone out there when you bring these people right on board, right from the get-go. Like, this is the safety is very important here, and this is why that it's important, and this is exactly what we're going to do for new hire orientation. You can't tell, but I'm going to step up on a soapbox here for a second. When it comes to SOPs, have the people write the SOPs. I can write an awesome one that's really not good because I just don't know the hazards out there. So the people who use these machines all day, every day know the hazards. And they also know how to do the maintenance on it. I could sit down and read a book, but without knowing how to do the maintenance, I could probably do a pretty bad job of trying to keep this thing up and running. Equipment training. This is also a overlooked work practice control. People buy equipment and they just assume I have smart people. They can just figure things out. We got books. They can just, but when you have the vendor come in and say, this is exactly how you're going to operate it. This is how you do your fine tuning. This is how you run it from point A to point B. Those are the real experts. And when they can take that knowledge and pass it down to us as new folks, that really helps out. So, equipment specific lockout, tagout. There's a lot of exemptions out there if it's only a single source and you haven't had any workplace issues and all that stuff. I do everything I can to go back and do equipment specific lockout, tagout procedures and have it posted right on the equipment so that right from the get-go, it's there. So people have great intentions and they're busy and somebody could say, gosh, it's all the way on that in that binder, it's on the other side of the plant. Do I really want to walk all the way down there? I'm pretty smart. I can just do this. But if you have that procedure posted right on the equipment, it's right there and ready to go. Gas detection also. And you may be already doing this for chemicals out there. But you may also be doing it for an oxygen deficient atmosphere that you could potentially have if you have a leak out there. So another good work practice control because also with gas detection, not only is it looking for the chemical, it whether that's let's just say a hydrochloric acid or some other ammonia, some other kind of gas. It's also telling you that it's not there at the same time too then. So that's also fantastic data. Let's go on to the next slide. And we come to personal protective equipment. So lowest form of hazard protection. And once again, because we're flawed humans, we take shortcuts. We have the greatest intention, but sometimes we don't use good judgment at all on this. When we look at gloves, you should have a lot of different gloves on hand. I have not found that one glove that's going to work for every operation out there. And when I do, I can probably retire for life because when you think about gloves, some gloves are good for chemicals. Some gloves, of course, are going to be good for puncture, or leather is different than plastic. And, just the different, they all have a need out there, and there's not a one type glove that's going to work for everything. Safety glasses out there. Is it something that you're calling it a nice to have, or is it something that you have to have? And not just that, but do you offer a prescription safety glasses out there? So, some companies will just say, well, you can wear the safety glasses over your prescription ones, and that's an option out there. But now that I'm old and have to wear glasses, I can see where there's just that little bit of sight change as opposed to if I just had a pair of prescription safety glasses. Chemical goggles out there. You could also use these for any dust or dirt in the workplace, also. So it doesn't mean that it's only going to be for chemicals out there. Just you have to look at the hazard. Chemical apron, and with that, of course, have arm protection. There have been places I've gone where they kind of act like, well, it's not going to get on my arms. It's only going to get on my chest and everything. Well, if you don't have your arms protected, but you have chemical gloves on, you then have, not quite from the wrist, but from the wrist to your shoulders, totally exposed out there. So I know that we like to think we're super smart and it's going to go exactly where we want it to go, but that's why that we also wear the arm protection, because it really could go anywhere. Welding leathers, if you're going to weld out there. Also, of course, obviously have a helmet with the correct shade on it. Getting back to chemicals, are you going to wear a face shield also? Because if there's any splattering, you can say, well, I got my chest covered and I got my goggles on. That doesn't mean that it won't get your cheek or your chin or anything else out there too. Lasers, I hope that you have your lasers enclosed. You may not get that money from the management, and you may have to look at glasses out there. Do you have the correct glasses for all the wavelengths and the options out there, and everybody knows that stuff, or do you have a we've done the best we can with the money that we have, option out there? So, and then finally, one of the ones that you can find, depending, of course, obviously on the hazard, is it a steel or a composite toe footwear out there? I've also seen these that integrated into chemical boots, where the chemical boots are kind of almost like waders is not really the right term, but if you had a plastic boot that would come up almost to your knee and just really so they could really take this steel or composite toe and kind of weave it into anything. I have seen where some companies are offering almost like a tennis shoe that has a steel toe on it also. Lot of different options out there, and once again, it depends on the hazard in the workplace, so there's probably not going to be a one size fits all for these kind of operations out there. And that's going to be it for the part A of hazard prevention and control as part of the OSHA Voluntary Protection Program. This is episode 21. My name is Dr. David Ayers. Have a safe day.